I was looking at a heat map of search behavior just last month, some raw user session data. And what struck me wasn't just that click-through rates on the classic 10 blue links were down.
They've been trending down for a while.
Exactly. But it was where the user's intention was just dying. They weren't bouncing. They were getting their question answered without ever leaving the results page. We used to call that zero-click search, and we treated it like, I don't know, a nuisance. But that implies the game is just harder. I think the game has completely changed.
Oh, it's not over, but the mechanics have inverted. We spent, what, 15 years optimizing for a router, Google sending traffic to a
To
destination
our website.
to your website. Now we're optimizing for an oracle, an engine that ingests the destination to synthesize an answer right there.
And that's the terrifying part for a lot of people listening, myself included.
Yeah.
I mean, if the engine synthesizes the answer, do we just become ghostwriters for a robot?
If you do it wrong, yes, that's exactly what happens. You become training data. You get ingested, you get processed, and then you get discarded.
Ouch.
But if you do it right, and that's what we're really going to break down today, you become the authority. You become the evidence that the robot cites to prove it isn't hallucinating.
That distinction between being training data and being evidence, that is the whole ballgame, isn't
It's
it?
everything.
Welcome to the Content Chip Podcast. This is a show about how content actually works today, not how it used to work. We talk about search, AI systems, and the operational side of producing content that survives change.
And before we dive in, we always like to be transparent about how we build this. This podcast is created by people who care deeply about their craft, working intentionally with AI, not to replace human judgment, but to extend it. That mindset is exactly why we built ContentShip, to give a single expert the leverage that once required an entire team. This episode was manually crafted by Mary Nignov, CEO at ContentShip.
By the end of this deep dive, you are going to understand why your technically perfect blog posts might be completely invisible to AI search. And more importantly, we are going to walk through a specific six-step framework that turns your content into the kind of evidence Perplexity is actively looking for.
And we should probably clarify right at the top, when we say Perplexity, we are really using it as a shorthand, for all answer engines.
Good point.
But Perplexity is, well, it's the leader in this behavior right now. They're sort of the poster child for this new model.
Right. So let's unpack the core philosophy first. We're calling this Perplexity SEO, but it feels so different from traditional SEO. What are we actually talking about here?
Well, let's just look at the objective. In traditional SEO, the objective was simple: get a user to click a blue link and visit your website. That was the win.
Traffic. The win was traffic.
Exactly. In Perplexity SEO, the objective is to be an easy, trusted source. You want the engine to read your content and use it to construct an answer for the user. The win is to be retrieved, verified, and quoted.
Retrieved, verified, and quoted. That sounds so simple, but I imagine the mechanics are wildly different from just being, crawled and indexed.
They are. And to understand why, we really have to talk about RAG. That's RAAG. It stands for Retrieval Augmented Generation. This is the core technology powering these answer engines.
Okay, so break that down for us. Retrieval augmented.
Right. So when you ask Perplexity a question, it doesn't just look up a database of facts it memorized, last year. It actually goes out in real time and retrieves relevant documents from the live web. It reads them, and then it generates an answer based on what it just found.
So it's literally doing research on the fly for every single query.
Precisely. It's looking for what we call proof of reality. It needs to substantiate its answer with evidence. Now, here is the catch. The model has, for lack of a better term, a limited attention span.
Just like us.
Chuckles. Just like us. It has to extract the relevant information very, very quickly. If your content is buried in, a long, flowery intro, or if it's just hard to parse, the model effectively skips it. You fail what we call RAG extraction.
Surviving RAG extraction. That sounds like the title of an action movie, but it's actually the daily reality for content teams now, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, if you cannot be extracted, you simply do not exist in this new world.
So the operational shift here for teams is, well, it's pretty massive. We need to stop betting everything on a single blog post ranking number one on Google. That's a winner-take-all mindset that just doesn't apply as much anymore.
That's a relic of the router model.
Right. So instead, we need to start placing answers where Perplexity shops for information.
That is a great way to put it. Where does the engine go shopping? Because if your product, your answer isn't on the shelf, it's not getting bought, it doesn't matter how good it is.
Okay, let's talk about that shopping list. This brings us to strategy number one, distribution. The source material highlights a really, really common mistake teams make, which is treating their own website as the only surface area that matters.
Right. And you can't blame them. We have spent the last decade being told, build your own platform, own your audience. And look, that is still true for conversion. Absolutely.
Build the bottom of the funnel, yes.
But for discovery in an AI world, it is completely insufficient. Perplexity pulls from the open web, sure, but it leans heavily on third-party destinations that have strong editorial signals or, and this is key, high user engagement.
And this is where that concept of proof of reality comes back in. The engine isn't just looking for a corporate blog saying our product is great. It's looking for verification from other sources.
Exactly. It wants a cross-reference. It wants to see a consensus. And one of the most fascinating patterns, the source material actually cites research from Axios on this, is how heavily Perplexity relies on Reddit.
Reddit, really?
Yes. In a 2025 sampling window, Reddit was a top-cited domain, consistently.
That is wild. But then again, it also makes perfect sense when you think about how we as humans use the internet now.
How do you mean?
Well, if I want to know if a new vacuum cleaner is actually any good, I don't go to the manufacturer's website. I go to Google and I type vacuum cleaner name Reddit.
You want the real story, the subjective recommendation. You want the practical how-to from someone who actually did it, not from the marketing department.
Exactly. And Perplexity is just mirroring that human behavior. It trusts these community discussions to verify facts and, you know, get the unvarnished truth.
So if you are a brand and you are completely absent from those community spaces where your customers are talking, you are missing a huge piece of the credibility data set that the AI uses to make its decisions.
So, okay, what is the operational takeaway here? If I'm a marketing manager, I can't just go and, you know, spam Reddit with links to my blog. That's a great way to get banned and hated.
No, absolutely not. That's the old school black hat thinking. You have to be helpful, genuinely helpful. If your category is discussed in public, you need a footprint there.
What does a footprint look like?
It could be your founder or a product expert answering technical questions on niche forums. It could be a maintained YouTube channel. Because remember, video transcripts are just text and they are indexed and read by these systems.
Oh, that's such a good point. I always forget that YouTube is basically a giant searchable library of text transcripts now.
It is. And think about review sites, directories, any place where buyers are actively comparing options. These are all third-party nodes in the network that tell the AI, hey, this brand is a real active participant in this conversation.
So the mental shift is your content calendar is no longer just blog post, blog post, blog post. Answers everywhere, Perplexity shops.
That's it. Think of your own website as the home base. That's where the deep, authoritative, canonical content lives. But these third-party pages, the Reddit threads, the YouTube videos, the core answers, the directory listings, those are your feeder system.
I love that term, feeder system. It makes it feel like an ecosystem rather than just a silo.
It is an ecosystem, and that feeder system is what makes your brand legible to the model. It provides all that crucial external validation.
And for the listeners, if you're sort of wondering, is my current stuff even working for this? The source mentions you can run a free content score with ContentShip to see if your current drafts are, you know, Perplexity friendly. It's a quick sanity check.
Yeah, I'd highly recommend it. It's really hard to fix what you can't measure.
Okay, so we've established that we need to be in more places, that's distribution. But we also need to make sure that when the engine does find us, whether it's on our site or somewhere else, it can actually understand what we're saying.
Yes.
This brings us to strategy number two, structure. And the mantra here seems to be, clarity beats cleverness.
See, this is where we have to unlearn so many bad habits from the last decade of SEO. For years, we wrote for humans who were skimming.
Right. We used catchy, vague, clickbaity headlines to get people to scroll down the page.
We wrote these long storytelling intros to increase the time on page metric because we thought it was a major ranking signal.
Guilty. I love a good storytelling intro.
We all do. They're great for humans.
Yeah.
But a retrieval engine hates them. RG-friendly writing is all about one thing, being extractable.
Extractable.
If a key idea, the actual answer, is buried under three paragraphs of scene setting, or if the language is too metaphorical or vague, the model has to work too hard to figure out what you're actually saying. And in the computational world, if you make the model work too hard, it just moves on to an easier source.
That is brutal. But it's fair. So let's get really practical. What does extractable actually look like on a page? What's the winning structure?
It starts with your headings, your H2s and your H3s. They shouldn't be clever puns. They shouldn't be literary. They should be the literal questions people are asking.
So instead of a header like "The journey begins," it should be something like "How do I start the installation process?"
Exactly. And then, and this is probably the most critical part, immediately under that heading, you need a direct answer. 1 to 2 sentences. No fluff. Just the answer.
I see. So you give the direct answer first, and then you can provide all the context and the supporting details below it.
Precisely. It's the inverted pyramid style of journalism, but applied for an AI reader. You state the decision or the recommendation plainly and upfront. A short TLDR, a too long, didn't read summary near the top of the page is also incredibly effective.
I've definitely seen that working. Mm. Just a simple bulleted list at the very top of a post saying, here is the summary of what you're about to read.
It's absolute gold for retrieval. The other thing is paragraph length. You want short paragraphs that act as what we call evidence blocks.
Evidence block.
Each paragraph should carry one and only one distinct idea. This is so important because it allows the model to lift that paragraph completely out of context and quote it as a source without losing the original meaning.
That's a really interesting way to think about it. It's like you're building the article out of Lego bricks, these self-contained chunks, rather than a continuous stream of clay that's all mixed together.
That's a perfect analogy. And you can use lists and tables, but use them sparingly, only where they genuinely aid extraction. If you make a table that is too complex with merged cells and whatnot, it can actually confuse the parser. But a clean, simple comparison table, that's very, very easy for an AI to read and understand.
So if I'm working with a writer, or maybe I'm using an AI writing assistant to generate a first draft, this is where I need to be really strict in the editing process.
Very strict. The draft needs to be ruthlessly edited into these crisp, clear evidence blocks. There's a great test mentioned in the source material for this. It's called the teammate test.
Oh, I like this one. Yeah, walk us through it.
It's super simple. You take your draft, give it to a colleague, and say, highlight 5 to 10 sentences that you think Perplexity would quote as an answer, and you give them a stopwatch.
Thanks.
If they cannot find those sentences almost instantly, if they have to hunt and peck for the meat of the article, then the model won't find it either. It's a fantastic human proxy for machine readability.
That is such a good heuristic. If a smart human can't find the answer in 5 seconds, the robot isn't going to bother.
Exactly. And just briefly, on the more technical side of structure, we should touch on schema markup.
Right, the structured data side of things.
It sounds scary to a lot of marketers, but it's not magic. It's really just about labeling your content in a way that machines can unambiguously understand.
So it's like putting a label on a jar in the pantry.
That's a great way to put it. If you have an FAQ section, you mark it up with FAQ page schema. If you're writing a how-to guide, you use how-to schema. If you're reviewing a product, you use product schema. It just reduces the ambiguity. It tells the system, hey, this isn't just a random paragraph of text. This is a specific answer to a specific question.
So you're making the intent machine readable.
You're making the intent machine readable, precisely.
Okay, so we have distribution being where the engine shops. We have structure making sure we are extractable. Now we have to talk about the unglamorous necessity. Strategy number 3, technical hygiene.
This is the part where everyone's eyes tend to glaze over. But listen, you can write the perfect answer, you can publish it on the perfect platform with the perfect structure, and you can still get 0 citations if Perplexity's crawler cannot physically fetch the page.
It's like throwing a massive party and forgetting to unlock the front door.
It's even worse than that. It's like having a bouncer at the front door who is actively stopping your most important guests from entering. The 2 biggest failure modes we see constantly are restrictive robots, rules, the robots.txt file, and overly aggressive security layers like web application firewalls or WFs.
Why does this happen so often? Is it like intentional? Are people trying to block these crawlers?
Sometimes it is intentional because companies are afraid of AI scraping their content for free, but honestly, most of the time, it's accidental. Default security settings from a hosting provider might flag the Perplexity bot as suspicious traffic because it behaves a little differently than a standard Googlebot crawler.
Ah, so you'd be blocking it without even realizing it. Your own security system is shooting you in the foot.
Exactly. So the number one action item here is to go check Perplexity's official crawler guidance. They publish their user agents and their IP ranges. You need to make sure your firewall and your server rules explicitly allow list those.
Okay, that's step one. What about this idea of index hygiene?
This is all about making sure your house is clean and easy to navigate for the crawler. It starts with clean sitemaps. If your sitemap has a bunch of broken URLs or old duplicate pages, you are just wasting the crawler's time and budget.
Right, the infamous crawl budget.
It comes to your site, it hits a bunch of dead ends, and it just leaves before it gets to your new important content. And then there are canonicals. We hear this word a lot in SEO. Why is it so crucial for perplexity?
Yeah, refresh us on that.
Because of ambiguity. Let's say you have three blog posts that are all kind of about the same topic. Maybe one from 2022, an updated one from 2023, and a new one from 2024. If you don't use a canonical tag to tell the engine which one is the primary version, it has to guess.
And it might guess wrong.
It might pick the old one. Or it might just dilute the authority and value across all three so none of them are seen as the definitive answer. You have to consolidate your signal. Have one best answer for any given topic.
That makes a ton of sense. And what about speed? We talked about freshness being important earlier.
Speed of discovery is vital. If you update a page with breaking news, but the crawler doesn't come back to your site for 2 weeks, you've completely missed the window. This is where protocols like IndexNow come in.
Tell me more about that.
It's a protocol supported by Bing and other search engines that lets you actively ping the engine the moment you update a URL. It says, hey, come look at this now, it's new. It can reduce the time between publishing and being discoverable from days or even weeks down to minutes.
Wow. That is a huge competitive advantage if you're in a fast-moving industry like tech or news.
It's a game changer.
So let's just recap the one time this quarter checklist from the source material. It's 1, confirm Perplexity Bot isn't blocked by your firewall. 2, validate your sitemap for accuracy, no broken links. 3, ensure you have clear canonical targets for all your content. And 4, establish some kind of indexing push process, like using IndexNow. Did I get that right?
You nailed it. Just do those 4 things every quarter, and you are technically ahead of 90% of your competitors. It's foundational.
Okay, moving on. We have built the car, we've tuned the engine, we've made sure the doors are unlocked. Now we actually need to drive it. Let's talk about strategies 4, 5, and 6, which are all about launch, anticipation, and PR. So strategy 4 is win the new post window.
This is a really fascinating dynamic. Perplexity, like other modern discovery engines, appears to give new content a sort of trial period. When something new is published and discovered, it seems to surface it in a few answers to see what happens.
It's testing the waters, seeing if it's any good.
Right. It tests the engagement. If people click the citation in the answer, if they seem to spend time reading the source, the engine learns, okay, this is a good, helpful answer. And it keeps it in the rotation.
And if there's just silence?
If there is silence, no clicks, no engagement, it fades away. It gets tagged as unhelpful and disappears.
So simply hitting publish and then, you know, walking away and hoping for the best is a death sentence for your content.
It is the definition of post and pray, and it does not work anymore. You need a real launch, not hope.
I love that phrase, real launch, not hope. So what does a real launch look like for a small team? We're not talking about a Super Bowl ad campaign here.
Yo, no, it's all about coordination. It's about condensing your activity into a very short window right after publishing. You might pre-announce the post in your reliable channels, your email newsletter, maybe a LinkedIn post.
Building some anticipation.
Exactly. Then when it goes live, you don't just drop a link and run. You publish a clear social thread that actually summarizes the core answer. You give the value away upfront on the social platform.
You're not just teasing, you're teaching.
Yes. And you share it into those communities we talked about earlier, the relevant subreddits, the forums where people are actively discussing the question your content answers. Then, maybe a few hours later, you follow up with a second social post highlighting a specific tweet-sized stat or a powerful takeaway from the piece. You are creating a pulse of activity around that URL.
It reminds me of the dynamics of Google Discover. Seems to be the same logic. Newness plus a spike in engagement equals visibility.
It's the exact same feedback loop. The algorithm needs a signal from humans that this piece of content is valuable and timely. You have to manufacture that initial signal.
And a quick note here on using AI for social media, the source warns against just using it to create more noise, right?
Absolutely. It's quality over quantity. Use AI to help you write better, more insightful summaries, not just to generate 10 different versions of the same boring link post. If you spam, you degrade your signal and you'll get ignored.
Got it. Okay, strategy 5, restructure for how people prompt. This is interesting because prompting is fundamentally different from old school searching.
Very, very different. A search query might be 2 words. CRM software. A prompt is a full sentence or even a paragraph. It's something like, what is the best CRM software for a small real estate agency with 5 agents that costs less than $50 per user per month?
It's full of constraints and edge cases and comparisons.
Exactly. So your content needs to anticipate those constraints. You aren't just answering the main high-level query. You are anticipating the next prompt.
The follow-up questions.
Yes. The source suggests a brilliant tactic here. Look at your sales call transcripts and your support tickets. What are the top 3 to 5 questions people always ask after they get the basic answer about your product or service?
That is such a smart, practical tip. It's like if everyone asks, but does this integrate with Slack? Right after you explain what your tool does, then you should have a header that says, does this integrate with Slack? Right on the page.
And you answer it directly. You add these short, specific sections to your page that address those common follow-ups. And be incredibly specific. There's a great editing test for this, too.
What's that?
Go through your draft and mark every sentence that is general. Then try to rewrite it with concrete constraints. Add names of tools, add years, add specific conditions. Instead of our software is great for teams, right? Our software is best for remote marketing teams of 10-50 people who use the full Google Workspace suite.
It's about matching the granularity of the user's question with the granularity of your answer.
Precisely. The more precise you are, the easier it is for the model to match your specific passage to a user's specific prompt.
Okay, strategy 6. This one surprised me a little bit. Press releases as prepackaged answers. I have to be honest, I thought press releases were dead.
Well, the old style of press release, you know, writing a PDF, blasting it to a list of journalists and hoping they call you back, that is largely dead, yes. But the press release as a structured data artifact, that is very much alive.
Explain that. What do you mean by structured data artifact?
Think about the fundamental structure of a press release. It's a document that is designed to clearly and efficiently state who, what, when, where, and why. It has a headline, a dateline, a summary paragraph, and usually a quote. It is highly, highly structured.
So it's basically pre-formatted for an AI to digest it easily.
Exactly. It reduces the model's uncertainty to almost zero. If you write a flowery blog post about a new product launch, the AI might have to guess the official launch date or the exact pricing. But if you write a press release that says Company X launches product Y on date Z for price A, the AI can extract that information with near 100% confidence.
So the strategy is to write press releases not necessarily for the Wall Street Journal, but for the answer engine.
Yes. But there's a critical caveat here. Credibility still matters. Publishing that press release only on your own website is a weak signal. Getting it placed on a newswire or an outlet that has some editorial trust, even a niche industry wire, is much, much stronger.
Right. It's that third-party validation and distribution piece all over again.
And you want to keep the formatting consistent so it survives syndication. You want that core who, what, where, when, why information to remain intact and easily parsable no matter where it gets republished.
This is all starting to come together. We have the philosophy, the distribution, the structure, the tech, the launch, and the format. But how do we know if any of this is actually working? Let's talk about metrics and the under-the-hood logic of why something gets cited.
Right. So we can synthesize everything we've discussed into 3 main buckets that seem to determine citations. If you want to know, why did my page get cited? Or, more often, why didn't it? Yeah, the answer is usually in one of these 3.
Okay, bucket 1, retrieval friendliness.
This is the combination of the structure and the technical piece. Is it easy for the crawler to fetch? Is it easy for the parser to understand? The source actually references a specific academic paper here, RxFi.2501.07391.
You know it's a deep dive when we're citing ARCS numbers.
Tuckles, I do love a good white paper. But the gist of it is that chunkable evidence, writing in those self-contained Lego bricks or evidence blocks we talked about, statistically reduces error rates in RJ systems. It just makes retrieval more accurate and reliable.
Bucket 2.
Freshness.
This is simple. Recency beats depth for any query that implies a latest or new angle. If the prompt is, what are the best laptops in 2026?
Mm-hmm.
An article from 2025, no matter how good it is at a disadvantage. So you must update your pages, and you must ping the index to let the engine know you've updated them.
And bucket 3, credibility. And this brings up a tricky subject, the whole legal and ethical landscape.
It does. The entire AI ecosystem is getting much stricter about sourcing. We've seen major disputes like the Reddit versus Perplexity situation that made headlines in 2025.
Right. There were those lawsuits and public allegations about scraping and attribution. I remember seeing reporting from Ars Technica and others on that. And we're not going to take sides on the legalities here, but the marketer's takeaway from all of that is crystal clear. The system is being built to value transparency. You need to cite your own primary sources within your content. You need to avoid making unsupported claims.
So if you make a big claim that isn't backed up by proof of reality somewhere else, the model might see that as a risk.
A huge risk. It might flag your content as a potential hallucination risk and just drop it from consideration entirely. Being safe to cite is just as important as being easy to cite.
That is a really, really important insight.
It's critical.
So for a small team that can't track 100 different metrics, what should we actually be looking at?
Keep it incredibly simple. Create a lightweight dashboard. For each important piece of content you create, track just 4 things.
Okay.
Number 1, is it crawlable? A simple yes or no. 2, was it indexed quickly after we published or updated it? 3, did it get some early clicks from our distribution efforts, that initial launch signal? And 4, is Perplexity actually citing it for any of the prompt variants we're targeting?
And that's it.
That's it. If you can answer yes to those 4 questions, the rest is just iteration and improvement. You aren't drowning in data, but you're seeing the entire pipeline from creation to citation.
I like that. It's manageable. It's actionable.
Exactly.
We have covered a massive amount of ground here. I just want to pause for a second. If you are listening to this and your brain is absolutely buzzing with to-dos and ideas, that's a good sign, but it can also be, a little overwhelming. If you're finding this breakdown useful, please consider following the show or sharing this deep dive with your content lead. It might just save them a lot of headaches.
And honestly, if you share it, you're helping us with our own distribution signal. So we definitely appreciate that.
Chuckles. Exactly. We have to practice what we preach.
Mm-hmm.
So let's wrap this all up. How do we operationalize success? How do we turn this from a one-off experiment into a repeatable system?
I think it comes back to that core philosophy. Perplexity SEO rewards teams that treat visibility as a specific sequence. Distribution first, then structure, then crawlability. Most teams try to solve it in reverse. They perfect a blog post on their site and then wonder why no one sees it.
They skip the distribution and validation steps. And this brings us back to content ship. We mentioned at the start that this entire episode was crafted by Marian Ignev, our CEO.
Right. And the reason most content teams fail at this isn't usually a lack of skill or talent. It's a lack of capacity. They simply cannot keep up with the full cycle discovery, drafting, optimizing, distributing, refreshing all at once for every piece of content.
It's the content treadmill problem. You're always just trying to keep up.
It is. And ContentShip was built specifically to solve that operational bottleneck. Mm. It helps score ideas against persona fit. It checks keyword relevance. But most importantly, it helps you produce first drafts that are already structured for both Google and LLM extraction. It does the heavy lifting on that structure bucket so your team can focus on the insight and distribution buckets, which is where humans add the most value.
So it's giving you that head start on the extractable format we spent so much time talking
about. Exactly. Gets the Lego bricks organized for you.
I want to leave the listeners with a final provocation.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked a lot about tactics and technical details, but there's a deeper, more philosophical question here for everyone to think about.
I think the question is this. Is your content designed to be read, or is it designed to be retrieved?
Ooh, that's good. Unpack that.
Well, for the last 20 years, we designed content to be read by humans. But now, for a human to ever see it, it often has to be successfully retrieved by a machine first. If you design only for the human reader, you'll miss the machine retriever. But if you design only for the retriever, the human who eventually reads it will hate it. You have to thread that needle.
And the other question I'd add to that is, are you launching your posts or are you just hitting publish? Because in this new ecosystem, silence is invisible.
Silence is death for a piece of content.
This shift to answer engines isn't coming. It's here. Mm-hmm. The teams that adapt their structure and their distribution now will be the ones cited as the authority tomorrow.
And the ones who don't will just be wondering where all their traffic went.
To see how you can operationalize this Perplexity-ready engine without adding more tools to your stack, visit www.contentship.io or subscribe to the show to stay ahead of the curve. Thanks for diving deep with us today.
See you in the citations.